if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world
in terms of what they do.
Being an entertainment lawyer and working with filmmakers and music producers, I had to be competent in the areas of copyrights and contracts and things like that. And as I started seeing podcasting, I quickly recognized that the same issues arise and they just hadn't yet.
Do you have a podcast? Or are you thinking about starting one? Attorney and author Gordon Firemark can tell you all about the legal issues that you might want to keep in mind. Gordon is an entertainment attorney with 22 years plus experience representing artists, writers, directors, and producers. He himself is a hands-on entertainment professional with a background both in theatrical and television production, and he's a podcaster in his own right. Gordon is one of the featured speakers at Podcast Movement 2015 coming up in Fort Worth. The following program is not intended as legal advice. Please contact an attorney if you have legal questions. Gordon, how did you first discover your passion for theater and working in the entertainment industry?
Well, that story begins with me in kindergarten, going through a K-12 school in the Boston, Massachusetts area. And one day, the high school kids were doing their production of Oliver, and they invited our class to come and see a dress rehearsal. And from the moment the lights went up and the curtain opened, I was mesmerized, and it hooked me in that early. And I went home that day and nagged my parents, and they took me to see more theater, and that was sort of the beginning of it. And then cut to, 8 or 9 years later, we had moved across the country, and I had gotten, involved in other things, but I was running with a crowd of kids that was sort of getting into trouble, and the junior high school principal pulled me aside one day and said, "Hey, I need help running the sound and lights for the school variety show." And that sort of reeled me back into theater stuff, and I've been doing it ever since.
From there, what led you to become an entertainment attorney from being a theater professional?
So off to college I go after high school. I had begun working professionally in theater while I was still in high school, but off to college I go, starting out, I think, as a theater major. And I was not an on-stage kind of a person. I was always a backstage kind of guy. But the theater program at the college I went to, the University of Oregon, was much more performance-oriented, as most are. And so I decided I shifted around, and I got into radio, TV, and film, which is what I ultimately finished my major in. And in the course of that program, I started taking some of the graduate-level classes. In my senior year, I had sort of wrapped up all the undergrad stuff. And those graduate-level classes were public policy and the media and government regulation of the media and those kinds of things that sort of had the legal flavor. And I discovered an aptitude for it. Well, a professor called me aside and said, "You should think about going to law school." And I laughed. That was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard. So back to Los Angeles I come to work in the television film business, and my timing was just such that I was working for a cable network that did sports television. I really wanted to be doing feature and entertainment stuff, but just then the Writers Guild went on strike, and there was not going to be any work. And it turned out to be a very long strike, and so that's the time frame that I decided to go to law school.
Before you started your own podcast, what did you discover about new media laws and podcast law that may even have surprised you?
Well, as I was starting my own podcast was when I started really thinking about this. Now, being an entertainment lawyer and working with filmmakers and radio and music producers and folks like that, I had to be conversant and competent in the areas of copyrights and trademarks and contracts and things like that. And as I started seeing podcasting, even before I started doing it myself, I recognized that this was another kind of media production. And here it was all seat-of-your-pants hobbyists doing it in their basements and that kind of stuff. And I quickly recognized that, the same issues arise, and they just hadn't yet in that podcasting space. And so we have, issues about using people's music or using other people's stuff, or, you bring a guest on and then they don't like the way they sounded, or who knows what. And so that's sort of how I started discovering the legal connection to podcasting. And, my podcast have been sort of aimed in that direction.
Entertainment law update that people will find on firemark.com. Please tell me about the presentation you're going to be giving at Podcast Movement on August 2nd.
So the presentation is called The Law and the Profits, and, legal and business tips for podcasters. And really, I just want to survey some of these kinds of issues that I've mentioned, and we'll go through, you know, a series of tips about, you know, taking it seriously. Even if you're a hobbyist, there's some serious aspects to this, and understanding your dealings and your contracts and your copyrights and trademark issues, and understanding also what to do if you ever get that nasty letter from a lawyer.
Let's look at this from the start here. Taking it seriously, even if you're a hobbyist, why would you treat it as a business if it's a hobby?
Because the outside world is going to look at it like a business anyway. And even when you're, you know, you team up with a partner to do a show with a co-host or something like that, you've made a contract. You may not know it, but you made a contract. And if it's an oral contract, the problem is if there's ever a dispute or a breakup of that relationship or a disagreement over what happens to that sponsorship money, you know, 5 years down the line, the show's doing great and you've got sponsors' money coming in. That's where the trouble can start if people aren't seeing eye to eye at that point. Having something written down between you that expresses that understanding is a great way to eliminate those misunderstandings. You know, sort of the good fences make good neighbors, good contracts make good partners.
What do you yourself do as a podcaster regarding getting those contracts and the releases and the permissions you need?
Well, I'm actually pretty informal about it, and this is one of those, you know, as most parents have said once or twice, is do as I say, not as I do. No, I mean, I have a co-host on one of my shows with whom I've been doing now, you know, we've been doing it for, gosh, almost 8 years. She and I long ago established the nature of that relationship through a series of emails that memorializes the thing. And fortunately, we were in agreement from the very get-go.
But even with this long-term working relationship, Gordon says there's a step he takes every time he and his co-host start to record a podcast.
You know, I say, you know, I'm recording and I want your permission to use the recording in any way I see fit. And she says, yes, let's get on with it.
So her yes, let's get on with it implies the contract that yes, she understands that you may be repurposing this in the future. You may be doing just about anything you might like to do.
Yeah, and with her, you know, the other thing is after that amount of time, she's also a lawyer. We have a course of dealing that we can rely on and look to say, yes, this is how the relationship works. But when you're just starting out, you don't have that course of dealing. And that's why it's so important in the beginning to get things clarified.
Let's also talk about intellectual property, copyrights, and trademarks as they apply to podcasters.
Well, you know, copyright law is sort of the foundation on which all of the media operates, because these assets, these things we create, are mostly an intangible kind of a property, right? So, you know, it's important that we understand how to protect our own stuff when we create works like podcast episodes. But it's also just as important to understand how those laws apply to our use of other people's property. So the classic example, of course, is if you use a piece of music as the opening or closing or just in the middle of your show, you need to have the permission, the license to use that music, unless you own it and created it yourself. And music is especially tricky because there's more than one copyright for each record. You know, the songwriter wrote something and owns a copyright, and then the recording artist recorded it, and usually the record company owns that. So we have a bit of legwork involved in tracking down the owners and getting the confirmation of the authorization to use the piece. Unlike the terrestrial radio world or the satellite radio, where there are some blanket licensing structures in place, that's not the case for podcasting. And so we have to laboriously trudge through the rights clearance landmines.
Suppose the piece of music is something you yourself have created. How do you protect that and, in fact, your own intellectual property on the podcast?
Well, the good news is that when you create something like a song, the mere act of creating it, if it's original work and you've fixed it in some tangible form, that is, written it down, recorded it on tape or disc or whatever, you own the copyright from the inception, from the moment that you fix it. There are legal things you can do, you know, registration, putting notice on the work and those kinds of things. They are all very helpful. But the basic rule is, you know, create it, make sure it's original, doesn't use anybody else's stuff, and get it into some tangible form, and you own it. And then protecting it is more a matter of, you know, policing it and finding out if somebody's using it without permission.
What are the steps if someone is using your work without permission?
Well, most lawyers, I think, would say, well, we have to send them a cease and desist letter, and then we have to sue them for copyright infringement. And I think those are, you know, legitimate strategies to use, but I also think that there's something to be said for catching more flies with honey, you know. And, you know, if someone's using your stuff, call them up. Say, hey, listen, I notice you're using my stuff and you haven't obtained permission. And, you know, if you don't mind them using it, you say, and I'd love to give you that permission so we're all, you know, up on the up and up. And you can either just give the permission, or if you want to collect a license fee, you can negotiate that fee. If they're intransigent or difficult or rude to you, then that's when you send them the cease and desist letter. But, you know, start soft and build up to the hard approach.
Be nice, in other words.
Sure.
You said member of the media. When is a podcaster considered a member of the media, or are we automatically?
You know, that's a little bit of a in the eye of the beholder kind of an issue. I think of myself as in the media because I'm making media and I'm putting it out there. And I certainly expect that if ever challenged, I'm going to avail myself of all of the legal rights that the media have. And, you know, mostly that's what we're going to talk about that at length in the session at Podcast Movement. But, you know, the First Amendment has protections for freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And it certainly is speech when you do a podcast, but I think it's also press. And, you know, that's not to be abridged. So the short answer is, I think from the inception, by the mere act of making media, we can consider ourselves to be in the media. But there are going to be government institutions and other organizations that don't think that way. You know, I'm thinking of the, for example, if you try to get a press credential to go to, I don't know, Comic-Con or one of these big events, some of these kinds of places are very open to the idea that podcasters are media and others are not. I know that, you know, some of the police departments will not grant a press credential to a podcaster, but if you're a radio host, they do. You know, and there's really very little distinction there except for the size of your audience.
Which is really interesting because I think we're kind of the radio of the future.
Absolutely.
As you see podcasting explode here, what do you think will be some of the main laws and main considerations that are going to affect podcasters in the future?
Well, I think the intellectual property laws in particular, the copyright law, is going to, we know it's under revision now. The committee work in the Congress has been going on for a couple of years, and it will certainly take a few more years to work through. But we're going to see some changes to the copyright law that will certainly affect podcasters and all digital content, frankly. And I think that's a good thing overall. Beyond that, these questions of press freedoms and, you know, reporter shield laws, and do they apply? And also, you know, are we protected the way press is protected for the content we put out in terms of libel and slander and invasions of privacy and things like that? That's going to be just a slow evolution. You know, the law takes a long time to catch up with technological advances. For the most part, I think that's a good thing, but we don't want to be reactionary and swinging in every direction, you know, at every little thing that comes up.
Keep our eyes on it and stay updated is what I've heard you say.
Mm-hmm. Listen to my podcast.
Absolutely. Entertainment Law Update. What would be one absolute favorite tip that you would like to give podcasters about protecting themselves as they look at something that's pretty much on a lot of people's mind, which is monetization and being an actual money-making business?
Well, that's the take it seriously. And understand your contracts, I think, is important. And understand how contracts are made and that you can make one without knowing it. So being mindful about the arrangements you make with people. You know, if you decide to monetize and you take an advertiser, you know, getting as much clarity as possible in those deals about not just how much you're going to get paid, but what's expected of you in exchange for that payment and what else other than the payment you may expect from the advertiser, for example. And do you have a way of suspending the ads if for some reason the advertiser turns out not to be consistent with your podcast message or something? You know, actors in films often have a morals clause. And, you know, if they do something stupid that's going to cast them in a bad light with the public, the movie company doesn't want to still have to make the movie with that actor. And it's sort of the same thing if you're a podcaster, and this goes both ways. If you are a podcaster with a sponsor or an advertiser and you do or say something that the advertiser feels is inconsistent with their brand and their image, they're going to want out. And the same for you. If the advertiser takes a position or is exposed as having some negative aspect, you may want to not have them as an advertiser anymore. So can you break the contract? How do you get out?
What's a good resource for anybody who's wondering something like that? Let's say they're getting into a deal with an advertiser and maybe they want to know, you know, how do I break it if they're not consistent with my brand, or how do I verify this is what I expect, this is what you expect?
Well, I think that, you know, a good resource is your lawyer. If you don't have a lawyer, I think the time when you really need to start thinking about having a lawyer. But there's a terrific ebook out there, if you don't mind a shameless plug.
I don't mind. I've read it and I love it.
It's called The Podcast Blog and New Media Producers Legal Survival Guide. And I wrote this about 5 years ago. It's sort of due for an update, but the good news is the law, as I said, is slow to move and change. So, you know, the book is still quite relevant. It's available at podcastlawbook.com. And it sort of walks through most of these issues and gives you an overview, really, to make it possible for you to spot the issues and know when you're getting into shark or lawyer-infested waters.
We'll abstain from the lawyer and shark jokes here.
Yeah, I'm the one who made it.
One of the things that you say in your book is that the podcaster has some legal and ethical responsibilities when editing audio. Would you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, sure. You know, you and I can have a lengthy conversation and record it, and then, you know, either or both of us could edit that to change the tone of what's been said, to change the context, or to delete the context of a statement. You know, I might make a joke, but if you take out the setup, the punchline, it could make me sound, you know, a very crass or, you know, perhaps racist or something like that. And so when I say that there's an ethical responsibility, I think we have to be, if we think of ourselves as media, we have to take that seriously and behave as media and be journalistically honest. We can leave out the discussion of the state of modern journalism, but, you know, I think there's an obligation to share in a truthful way the material that we gather. And so editing it to change context, to change meaning is, I think, a crossing the line. And if it crosses the line in a way that is harmful to your interview subject, that also could be a position where you have some liability, and that's a legal obligation to, you know, again, not create a false impression of what the interviewer said or believes. And if you do, there could be lawsuits, even with those releases that I talked about, you know, getting that, securing that permission. And by the way, I think that the best releases should be in writing as well, even though that's not what I always do.
God forbid, but what if somebody listening gets hit with a nasty gram? What if somebody's saying, I'm going to sue you? What are the steps they ought to take?
Well, first off, I would say put the letter down and take a quick walk around the block or something to cool yourself down and breathe. You know, get a little distance from the emotional response to, you know, there's a visceral response that you get when you have to deal with these things. Take a second to get some distance so you're not reacting immediately and intensely to things. Because my experience with my own life as well as clients is that usually that first reaction is too much to pick up a gun. Second, evaluate the letter and the merits of what's being said, and sometimes there is some merit to it. But then I think consult with somebody like me. You know, talk to a lawyer who can either talk you off the ledge or tell you that you're absolutely in the right and here's how we should respond. But, you know, my real point is don't respond too quickly and be sure you're not admitting and giving away the farm when you do respond.
You and I are listening to entertainment law expert Gordon Firemark, featured speaker at the upcoming Podcast Movement, which is the largest podcasters conference in the world. Gordon's presentation, The Law and the Profits, happens Sunday afternoon, August 2nd at 2:35 at Podcast Movement in Fort Worth. You'll find location information on podcastmovement.com. And finally, Gordon, as an entertainment attorney, as a theater professional, as a podcaster, what do you most want podcasters and maybe just anybody to take away from your experience about innovation, creativity, and making a difference?
Well, I think that everybody has a voice, and I think that more of us should use it often and increase the public discourse on subjects that are interesting to us. That's really what I, you know, that's the strength and the value of podcasting. We've got the playing field, you know, as level as it's ever been. It used to be that you had to have a lot of money and own a printing press to get your word out. And now the printing press is this computer on your desk and an internet connection. And I think, you know, what a great opportunity this is for all of us to really open up conversation on issues.
Gordon, thank you for your time today.
Well, this has been a pleasure, Dot. Thank you.
You and I have been listening to entertainment attorney, podcaster, and author Gordon Firemark.
Gordon is going to be speaking at Podcast Movement, the world's largest podcaster convention, on Sunday afternoon, August 2nd in Fort Worth. If you're going to be in the area, you'll find more information on podcastmovement.com. Meanwhile, on Gordon's website, firemark.com, is a link to his podcast, Entertainment Law Update. It's a great one. That's firemark.com. Also, for more information about Gordon's ebook, take a look at the website podcastlawbook.com. That's podcastlawbook.com. Once again, the preceding podcast is not intended as legal advice. Please contact an attorney if you have legal questions. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.